I'm looking at this Phoenix Suns, coached by Monty Williams, and they are a threat in the West. They are a Denver Nuggets team that we saw this year and will shock and surprise a lot of people. And don't be surprised if they make it to the Western Conference Finals and be competing with one of those L.A. teams, or should I say California teams, to go to the NBA Finals.
That was Kendrick Perkins comparing the Phoenix Suns to the 2020 Denver Nuggets. Do not be surprised, he says, if they're in the Western Conference Finals playing one of the Southern California teams.
The Western Conference Finals?
That's what Kendrick Perkins just said. You would have heard it if you had your earbuds in.
The Western Conference Finals.
Would you like me to play it again for you since you didn't have your earbuds in when I played it the first
Kendrick
time?
Kendrick Perkins has the Suns in the finals.
So I'm looking at this Phoenix Suns, coached by Monty Williams, and they are a threat in the West. They are a Denver Nuggets team that we saw this year and will shock and surprise a lot of people. And don't be surprised if they make it to the Western Conference Finals and be competing with one of those L.A. teams, or should I say California teams, to go to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, but Ryan Russillo told me that it's, you know, one of the worst kept secrets in the NBA that Booker wants out of here so bad.
Man.
I mean, I don't get it. Like, which one is it?
Freezing cold takes exposed right there. But that tweet did not age very well.
I ripped the hell out of it. The second that came out, I ripped the hell out of it.
You know what? And based off of, now again, this is just Vegas odds. Okay, so I understand this is not the end-all be-all.
But that usually, I mean, that kind of means something, doesn't it? I'm not a gambler, but
it usually kind of means something. So take what Kendrick Perkins said. You're shocked at what Kendrick Perkins just said. And recognize that maybe it's not that surprising. And here's the reason why. Superbook Sports released their updated NBA odds after the first round of kind of free agency. And the dust is mostly settled, right? Most of the heavy lifting has been done for almost all the teams out there. The Phoenix Suns have the seventh best title odds
in the NBA. Not the West.
They have
The NBA.
They're tied for the fourth best title odds in the Western Conference. Fourth. Only three other teams in the West have better title odds than the Phoenix Suns do.
Yes, that's sneaking in games.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, at some point, maybe some fans will be there. The Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets, and then the Mavs and the Suns are tied at 25-1.
I'll be that guy that cleans, you know, the sweat off the floor. You know, just, you know, you don't even have to pay me.
Okay, usually those kids are like 15, but if you really want one of those jobs, maybe we could see what we could do. Sure. You need to talk to Vinny Murata, PA announcer. He's going to be there. Maybe he needs an assistant.
Kidnap Vinny?
Maybe kidnap him. Butter him up. Find out what he likes to drink.
He needs a spotta.
Get him a bottle of it and see if you can be a spotta. See if you can be Vinny Spotta for the game so you can sneak him into some of these games. The Lakers, Clippers, Bucks, Nets, Celtics, Heat, Nuggets, Sixers, Mavs.
Okay, you went really fast.
Sorry. You're right.
You went really fast. A little bit slower.
These are all the teams who have better odds to win the title than the Suns.
Okay.
And you can two hands to count them. Lakers.
Yep.
Clippers.
Yep.
Bucks.
Okay.
Nets. Celtics. Heat. Nuggets.
That means that the Suns have better odds than Portland?
Yes.
And Utah?
Yes.
Wow.
And the Raptors. And the Raptors.
Who just signed Fred VanVleet
to, what, a four-year, $75 million. Now, is all of this warranted? I don't know. Do I need the Suns to get to the Western Conference Finals and be what Kendrick Perkins thinks they can be? No.
Yes.
You do? You need that?
I was going to say.
Why not? Let's just go for it.
No, because I've been starving for 10 years. I don't need my first meal to be the perfectly cooked steak that Ruth's Chris with the cream spinach
why
and the twice baked potato.
I mean, why do you want your first meal to be something less satisfactory? You're Tom Hanks. You've been on an island for all those years. You get out. Do you not want a juicy ribeye?
I want it. I don't need it. I don't need it. I haven't eaten a thing for 10 years. I don't need that to be my first meal. I would want that to be my first meal.
You're okay with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
At this point, I'll take anything.
Okay.
No, I'm being serious.
I understand what you're saying. I mean, you don't want to get... You,
Like you make it sound like I don't want it. I want it to happen, but I don't need it to happen to be happy.
Yeah, there's a big difference between want and need. Something I try to explain to my wife all the time. You want this, but do you need this?
Right.
Yeah. Want and need, two different things. I understand what you're saying, right? I mean, babies, when you've been bad for 9 years and you haven't made the playoffs, and all of a sudden you can make the playoffs, even if you make it as a sixth seed, it's like you'll take it. You'll take it. Look, they could have got in last year. Caris LeVert's shot goes in and the Nets beat Portland, they're in as an 8 seed. And if they would have got waxed in 4 games, I would have been okay with it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whatever it was. Okay, fine. That's fine. You got in. So you are desperate to taste playoff basketball. But when people start, but now listen, it's the same thing like with the Cardinals. If the Suns are 8-2 after 10 games, you might want that steak. Well, with some portobello mushrooms on top, and you could change.
Yeah, with the garlic butter and the sizzling platter and all that stuff where they bring it to you on the plate where the plate's like 400 degrees.
Right, but like it could change based on how they... But right now your thinking is, man, sure. I'll be happy with anything, any type of playoff basketball. I'll take... I don't care if they're the 8 seed. But if they go off to a good start and they start playing well, your expectations change.
Absolutely. Expectations change all the time. It happens in every single team, every single league, teams that we've been fans of in this market, our expectations change for them. And yes, if they get off to an 8-2 start, if they're 15-4, I mean, whatever, then all of a sudden I'll start going, okay, yeah, I don't want to just get in. I want to get in with some style. But for now, like I joked earlier, and I wasn't even really joking. I need some Suns gear. I haven't felt like wearing it for the last 10 years. There hasn't been much of a reason to wear it for the last 10 years. I need me some Suns gear.
No Booker. What jersey do you want? Go Mikal Bridges, man.
That's who you'd choose.
I'd go Mikal.
No Booker.
And no, if you can't have no Booker, take
if
Booker
I can't
out.
Have Booker.
You can have any jersey you want on a player. You can back any player on this team.
You go Bridges, huh?
I go Mikal Bridges.
Oh, I think that's
probably... Who are you going, Jordan?
That's probably the one I would take.
I think I'm with you on that one as well.
Yeah, I think I'd take Mikal Bridges.
There it is, the Mikal Bridges fan club right here.
Who else would I...
I mean, you could go Chris Paul.
Well, you also could go Ayton.
Could go DA. You could go Chris Paul. Could go Cam. Could take one of the... You could go Jay Crowder. Could go one of the new guys.
I think it'd be Bridges.
I go McHale.
Burnsy, you'd look good in a Suns 99 Jay Crowder jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Especially that new The Valley, the new one. It's look, it's not just Vegas. ProBasketballTalk.com released a story this morning, last night. The five teams that improved themselves the most during this, you know, highly accelerated offseason.
One of the five.
Suns were one of the five. You know, and it's not... Chris Paul is the centerpiece to it, of course, but that's also Jay Crowder. That's also Etuan Moore. That's also retaining Dario Saric and Javon Carter. I mean, the Suns have put themselves in a position now. Now, I don't understand why Utah is not getting a little more love. I mean, they went on... That was a heck of a series they played against the Nuggets in the bubble. And Donovan Mitchell got paid over the weekend as a max player. And they kept a lot of their key guys as well. Clarkson and Favors and things like that. So you expect they're going to be back next year and they're going to be good too. But it's interesting to see the teams that the Suns have vaulted in the minds of many.
Portland and Utah.
Yep. Those are the two that surprised me the most.
And I thought Portland got better.
Yep.
The Covington edition.
Yep, I thought so too.
That made him better.
And if they have, you know, Nurkic for the entire season and Zach Collins for the entire, because remember they
didn't have either one of them
all last year.
They were
both hurt. Yeah. So they've already, in the minds of some, jumped Portland. Of course, they jumped Houston because that's a team in turmoil. I don't know if they would have jumped the Warriors, but now with the Clay injury, they did. The Warriors are like 100 to 1.
Oklahoma City was ahead of them. They won't be. Golden State. The Golden State one will be interesting. Because you're saying the Vegas odds kind of don't really believe in Golden State.
100-1 to win the championship.
Yeah, so you still got Steph, you got Kelly Oubre, you got Draymond Green. There's still some talent there.
Yeah.
But we'll see. You know, Steph's getting old. He's not young anymore. We'll see how he comes back from not playing. The Klay injury, devastating to them. But if he would have came back, Klay and Steph, a lot of people would have felt like that team would have had a chance in the West.
I'll tell you one thing that I've been super excited about. I mentioned this earlier. I'll say it again. I love the fact. I don't love anything about how COVID has impacted sports in 2020. But the one thing I do like, that this compressed rapid-fire NBA offseason happened 3 weeks before the start of the season. 4 weeks before the start of the season.
Oh, it's go time.
Because we don't have to sit around and wait.
No.
There's no, I mean, usually free agency in the NBA is like, what, July 4th or so? So you got to go all of July, all of August, all of September, half of October before you can see the goods and see what the team. You have to wait 4 weeks to see what this looks like. I think that's.
Well, when did they start practicing?
Oh, training camp opens on December 1st.
Okay, that's intense.
I know. I'm just talking about the regular season.
That's like 8 days.
Yeah. Yeah. We're eight preseason games. We're just a few days away from seeing what this all looks like. I think that's great because I don't have to sit around and wait and watch.
I think next
year
is going to be the same. If they want to get back on the calendar next year, it could be similar.
But yeah, it'll be similar. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, Thursday in Seattle was the Cardinals' worst rushing performance so far of the season. And now, thanks to Cliff Kingsbury, we have pretty good ideas to why. You'll hear it next on the Burns and Gambo show. I think we all sort of figured it was the case on Thursday night. Kyler Murray suffers that shoulder injury early against the Seattle Seahawks, and he only ran for 15 yards the entire game. And it was obviously a major part of why they lost to Seattle. The running game just never really got on track, right? We even talked about it on Friday. Hey, was the injury in Kyler's head? Was it affecting his throws? Was it affecting his running? We had Cliff Kingsbury on our show today. Normally on a Monday, he's on Bickley and Murata. They kind of redid their schedule coming off of the mini bye, so we were lucky enough to have Cliff on our show today. And first of all, he gave us the latest on Kyler's shoulder and how it's feeling after what happened on Thursday night.
It feels good. We're going to get him out there tomorrow on the grass and see what all we can do and adjust from there if need be. But, you know, talking to him today, I think he feels good about things going into the week.
And he might have said this before, but here's where I'm getting to the part about assuming this to be the case. He might have said this before, but I don't remember him saying this before. That part of the reason why Kyler ran for so little at Seattle was because they were calling a very conservative game plan, knowing they didn't want to risk injury.
Keep him healthy. Makes sense. Smart. You know, you don't want to go all in on that one game and risk him getting hurt. If you feel like he's taken some pops and stuff. We talked about how many hits he took in that game. He took more than in any game we've ever seen him play before. And if you felt like, hey, we're not going to have him run as much, we don't want to risk, you know, a big hit, hurting him and taking him. What you can't do is you can't lose Kyler Murray for four games right now. You can't. Yeah. You just can't. So if you had to sacrifice that game, and I'm not saying they the roundabout way, you know, we're not going to give it everything we have because we're not going to have Kyler run because we got to keep him in. You're still trying to win the game.
Of course.
But if you lose it, it's not the end of the world because you live to play another day because you've got Kyler for this week.
Here was the question and answer to Cliff, including a follow-up about why Kyler ran for so little at Seattle on Thursday.
I think probably having a little bit of a banged up wing there early. You know, we wanted to be safe and make sure that moving forward we didn't put him in harm's way, and so that was probably more than anything and what I'd say prohibited him from running as much. But once again, Seattle did do a nice job with their front, did some different things to try and take away some of those lanes.
So you dialed back some of the plays that maybe you normally would have called, given the kind of the status of his shoulder that had happened so early in that game. You were a little more conservative when it came to some of those running calls that maybe you normally would have done?
No question.
Nah, that's the first time I've heard him say that. Coming off, maybe he said that after Thursday's game. Maybe he said that Friday. I don't remember him acknowledging that. Yeah, we kind of dialed it back a little bit because we didn't want him to get him hurt. That to me was brand new information. Maybe it wasn't, but to me that was brand. It makes sense.
It's something we all thought about, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, okay, he's getting hit, he's getting popped. What do you got to do to protect him? Because again, you can't have Kyler Murray go out for any extended period of time. It's not like the New Orleans Saints where they've got a quarterback who they really like that could come in and play for Drew Brees after he broke every rib in his body, right? You know, with the Cardinals, you're like, ugh, Straveler? It's like you don't really feel good about the Cardinals' backup quarterback situations to win you games.
Yeah.
And get, so that's what you do. I mean, you know, in the end, it sucks that you lost the game, but Kyler Murray's playing this week against New England. And if that's what they felt they needed to do to make sure he played against New England, then they did the right thing.
Yeah. Cliff was also asked about late game situations. You asked him about managing the game late, play calling late. Here's what he said.
Yeah. Every game presents a new learning experience. when you're only in year two and trying to navigate this league and you know, build this organization. And so I definitely try to learn from each and every experience and trying to get better for the next time it arises.
Yeah, because as you kind of had pointed out on Friday, he has not had to manage a lot of late game situations given his time at Texas Tech.
No, and that's the thing that with Cliff, too, that this is where I give him a little bit of a mulligan. He's going to make mistakes. He hasn't been in a lot of these situations. He's got to learn. You know, he's got to learn, too. This isn't just Kyler learning, okay? It's Cliff learning, too. He had a losing record as the head coach in college. It's not like he doesn't have 150 wins. He doesn't have 100 wins. He doesn't even have 75 wins. He doesn't even have 50 wins in college as a coach. So, you know, when you sit there and you criticize Cliff Kingsbury, I get it. I mean, we'll criticize him if he makes stupid, you know, dumb decisions and doesn't understand clock management at the end of the game and everything, because we do. I mean, we've ripped him plenty of times. But I also expect that he's got to be in more of those situations to get a better understanding of how it works, because he hasn't been in a whole lot. If we go back and we go look at, I think he had 45 wins in college.
I think it was 45 and 50.
Okay, if we go back and we look at those 45 wins, I guarantee you most of them weren't coming down to the last 5 minutes of a football game. So he doesn't have the experience that a lot of other coaches have of tie game, 3 minutes left, down three, 4 minutes left, down seven, 5 minutes left. He doesn't have that. Now, you could study it all you want, but you need to be in those situations to get a better feel for it.
Well, and you need to, it's every situation is different, right? Every situation has its own kind of challenges. I didn't have that much of an issue with the play calling against Seattle this last time, but you think against the Bills, right? There was that series where he was ultra aggressive, throwing on first down, throwing on second down, when what the Cardinals needed to do was kill some clock and keep the ball away from the Bills, right? But he kind of read the room, at least I thought, he read the room wrong against the Bills. And then there was him playing super conservatively against the Miami Dolphins when the situation called for a little more aggression. I mean, I know it's almost kind of two-faced to say, well, be like this way, and then be like that another way. But every game is different. Every situation is different. And the Miami game called for a little more urgency and aggression, especially knowing that you might have to give the ball back to Tua Tagovailoa and give him the chance to go win the game. Whereas the Buffalo game called for you to be a little more conservative, kill some clock, keep the ball away from Josh
Allen.
Make them use timeouts.
Yes, I mean, take time off the clock.
Every situation is different, and I'm sure as his coaching career goes on, he will get better at that stuff, because it seemed like those two games in particular, he just didn't read the room the right way when it came
to
that.
But I do think, obviously we got to criticize him when he makes a bad decision. I think the more situations he's in like that, the better understanding of the game and the feel for the game that he will get. And he just doesn't have a lot of experience in those games.
It's a big one tonight on Monday Night Football.
It is.
It's the Rams in Tampa Bay taking on the Buccaneers. The Rams, if they win tonight, they become the number one team in the NFC West. They would pass the Seattle Seahawks because they beat them in Week 10. If they lose, then they would trade places with the Cardinals. Right now, the Rams are the sixth seed in the NFC overall, and the Cardinals are the seventh seed in the NFC. If the Rams lose tonight to the Bucs, the Cardinals become the sixth seed in the NFC, and the Rams move down to seven. It obviously doesn't matter that much, given that the Cardinals still have two games against the Rams. But, you know, every moment matters, and tonight is a big game in the power structure in the NFC and the power structure in the NFC West. I would imagine a lot of Cardinal fans will be rooting for Tom Brady and their former coach Bruce Arians tonight.
You have to. You have to root for the Rams to lose. At this point, the Rams in Seattle, every time they play, you're rooting for them to lose. You got no choice. You want to win this division. It's still, you know, I know Seattle's schedule is the easiest, but the Cardinals have two against the Rams. If they win both of those games, you know, there's a chance that they might be able to take this division.
And if memory serves, the 49ers have the Rams this weekend, coming up this weekend, and Seattle's got Philly, I think, on Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football, one of the two.
Seattle plays Philly.
Seattle plays Philly, and I think it's the Niners and the Rams.
San Francisco at the Rams, and Seattle's at Philly.
And, of course, the Cardinals at the New England Patriots. So every single one of these games just ups its level of importance and what it matters moving forward. Text the word GATE So 620-620, and then listen for your name tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. and 8:30 a.m. We're giving away two brand new barbecue grills and two custom Arizona Sports cornhole sets. You're also going to be invited to an exclusive virtual tailgate featuring Arizona Sports hosts and a chance to win a $250 gift card and a Yeti cooler from Four Peaks. Text the word GATE to 620-620, the Arizona Sports virtual tailgate presented by Four Peaks Brewing Company. Coming up, he helped the Suns get back to respectability. He made playing for Phoenix cool again. Now that he's gone, what does Kelly Oubre think of his time with the Suns? You'll hear from Kelly Oubre coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, so Sarah just mentioned it a second ago. I'm looking at your Twitter account. Yeah, you just tweeted it out a second ago.
Just got off the phone with the Suns. They have waived Eli Yacobo. So Eli Yacobo has been waived. They now have one open roster spot. I do not expect the Suns to use that open roster spot. I think that they will wait, save it, see what happens, but I do not expect that the Suns will do anything. So they're done. I mean, I expect that the Phoenix Suns are done right now. Eli Yacobo has been waived, and so they got rid of all the players that I said that they were going to get rid of. Baines is gone. Kaminsky's gone. Okobo's gone. I can't remember who else there was, but they... Oh, Diallo. Shock Diallo. Shock Diallo is gone. So Eli Yacobo just waived by the Phoenix Suns.
And now the Phoenix Suns feature an awfully deep team. Very versatile defensively and offensively. Your starters, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, presumably Jay Crowder at power forward, and of course DeAndre Ayton. And now their bench in the backcourt includes Etuan Moore, and Langston Galloway, two new players they signed from over the weekend and today. Moore, the sharpshooter who comes over to the Suns on a one-year deal. Langston Galloway, another shooter who comes over from the Pistons, 40% three-point shooter from a year ago. They retain Javon Carter. They retain Dario Saric in the front court. Of course, still Cam Johnson is part of that bench. They drafted Jalen Smith. They signed Damian Jones. The Suns are deep. They can defend. They can shoot. They can surround Booker with all sorts of guys who can...
Think about that. What you just said. They're deep. They can defend. They can shoot. Okay, sign me up.
Yep.
They are deep. I mean, one of the things you look at that I was looking at today is just, you know, the flexibility that they have. They have two traditional centers on this roster. In DeAndre Ayton and Jones. They have two flex centers, guys that could play center, you know, when you want to go smaller, which is Smith and Dario Saric. They've got four flex forwards, you know, guys that could play, you know, power forward. You have guys that can play power forward in center and guys that can play power forward and small forward. So they've got a very, very versatile team of players that can play a whole bunch of different positions. So that is where the Suns' strength is. The Suns' strength is in their depth. They have tremendous depth. And I'm glad you mentioned the defense, too, because it's one of the priorities is that they wanted to make sure they get guys that could defend. Now, Crowder is a very good defensive player. He's a strong guy. You can't really muscle him around. He could play defense. Chris Paul could play defense. So you're getting guys that could really get after it defensively, and that was important to them.
Paul, Crowder, Carter, you keep him. He can really defend.
Yep.
Of course, Mikal Bridges can really defend. Ayton, when he puts to his mind to it, can really defend. They're awfully, awfully deep, and now they've given Devin Booker everything he possibly could have wanted, which maybe puts to rest the let's keep Devin Booker happy storyline that's been circulating for the last 3 years. Now, what they don't have is Kelly Oubre. And, of course, he was traded to Oklahoma City as part of the Chris Paul deal. Then they flipped him to Golden State when they lost Klay Thompson. Kelly Oubre, in addition to giving an interview to David Aldridge on the Athletic website, was on 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. And they asked him today, why didn't he play in the bubble for the Phoenix Suns when they went 8-0 without him? Here's Kelly in his own words.
At the end of the day, you know, me coming back from the bubble, it obviously, you know, it was a mental clarity thing for me. I had just come off surgery right before COVID hit, and then everybody was forced to lock down and quarantine, and I was unfortunately not able to go to rehab like I was normally doing. I had to rehab from home, continuously work out in my backyard. I was blessed enough to have a court in my backyard, because no gyms were open or allowing people in. So, you know, I was still getting better and I was still getting stronger. But at the end of the day, I didn't mentally feel strong enough to be playing 5-on-5 at the highest level of obviously a great season that I was having.
Interesting. And that 40-second soundbite, he makes it sound like the choice was his. Yeah. I just wasn't ready
Ready to play 5-on-5 at the highest level. Like, I was working, I was getting better. But he was there with his team, right? I mean, he was there, he was cheering everybody on, he stayed in the bubble. He, you know, at that point, he had no idea that he wouldn't be back for another year. So he was a good leader, he was a good team player. I was on a San Francisco station last week after the trade went down, a Warriors flagship station. They wanted to know about Kelly Oubre. I spoke very highly of Kelly. You're going to love this guy. You're going to love him. He plays with such emotion, and he's so talented, and he can play defense, and he can shoot the three, and he dunks the basketball. There's not a lot of not really anything negative to say about Kelly. He's just a good guy, and he's a good player.
No, I got nothing to negative say about him either. I mean, he was fantastic. In a similar answer to the same question, he did an interview with David Aldridge over at The Athletic. I don't have the audio for it because it was in print, but he was asked about the bubble, and he said very similar things. You know, I just didn't feel comfortable mentally. I wasn't there. And then he said this, quote, "I could either push it, help this team go 8-0, and give ourselves the fighting chance to make the playoffs," which they did that without me. If I was there, would it have made any difference? Because as you can see, if you go back and look, all of the guys were playing with that fire and that energy that I played with all year trying to help the team get to the playoffs. I felt like I was still playing, even though I wasn't, because guys were playing with that same intensity. So almost as if he's saying, yeah.
My intensity rubbed off on you.
Yes.
Yep, the way I wanted you to play all year, I played that way, and it rubbed off on you guys in the bubble.
That's what I took from it.
Like, I mean, I don't know what to believe. I don't know. I mean, they had a second training camp. I think that helped. They had time off. They had an opportunity to go play in the bubble, and they took advantage of it. Did, you know, you would hope that, you know, players like Kelly rub off on guys. He played with a lot of emotion. He was a good player, and he cared. I mean, you got to care. And that's why, you know, listen, I'm not a Golden State Warriors fan, but I want Kelly to do well. You know, I sent him a message. I wish him the best. I hope he does well over there. He was a good player for the Phoenix Suns. So was Ricky Rubio.
Yeah.
So was Aaron Baines. And that's one of the things that you look at. Like, they're getting better, but they moved on from a few players that actually did a nice job in helping them get where they got to last year.
No question about it. No doubt about it. Now, Oubre, again, on 95.7, the game today, talking about being disappointed, whether he was disappointed in the bubble play.
I was there to be a leader in with a voice. So I was just happy to be able to cheer my team on, just give them the energy from the sidelines that I could, but it was still not enough. You know, people still thought I was holding out for some odd reason when, at the end of the day, nobody really cared about my mental health and my mental clarity coming off of that injury and the times of the world. So I was just more so happy to be a support system for the guys who were out there.
Now, he did
team player
talk about Joe Lacob, who's the owner of the Warriors, absorbing the $14.5 million salary and then the luxury tax bill that comes with it. Kelly Oubre is like an $80 million player.
That's insane.
For the Warriors this year.
That is insane.
It is insane how much money he's costing them. Oubre made this comment about his new owner, but it also sounded like a little bit of a shot at his old owner.
You just hit the nail on the head, man. I can play for an owner. You know, somebody who actually cares about, you know, the organization and not just the, you know, the perception of the organization on the media end of it.
Is that an anti?
It's interesting. I'm trying to figure it out. Play it again.
You just hit the nail on the head, man. I can play for an owner, you know, somebody who actually cares about, you know, the organization and not just the, you know, the perception of the organization on the media end of it.
Now, I'm sure the question was asked, it framed up as, hey, The owner of the Warriors is spending $80 million to make sure you can be on this roster. How do you feel about that?
Well, and it was also framed up as you also have played for the Wizards and the Suns, who don't necessarily have great... I mean, in the question, they brought up his other stops and the other owners.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't... You know, it's... I mean, Robert Sarver and James Jones, they gave him his first big contract in the NBA. 2 years, $30 million.
Yeah.
They made him rich for the rest of his life. So, I mean, he signed the deal. He wanted to be here. They traded for him, and then they signed him.
Yeah.
They didn't keep him because they had a chance to get Chris Paul.
Does he harbor any resentment that they didn't give him a longer contract? I don't know. I mean, remember that the back and forth of that, you know, we weren't sure how much Kelly was going to get. In the end, he got what he wanted on a yearly basis, but I'm sure he wanted more years than that. The Suns were like, well, if we're going to give you $15 million a year, it's only going to be for a couple of years. We're not going to do it long term.
It was a good deal for both teams, right? Because it didn't tie the Suns to Kelly for a long period of time. And it didn't tie Kelly to the Suns for a long period of time, in case Kelly wanted to cash in on a big, you know, on a bigger deal, a big deal.
But you hit on something, and I hadn't really thought of everything that went down over the last 3 or 4 days, but you're right on the money. Typically, when guys depart, okay, from your team, you're kind of happy to see them go. And I'm happy to see the Suns and the improvements that they made. But I did like all three of those players. I'm not celebrating because Aaron Baines is a member of the Toronto Raptors. Like when
Ty Jerome, who cares? Yeah, Elia Kobo, who just got waived, as we reported, who cares?
Yeah, but when the Morai twins left, good riddance. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Bledsoe, see ya. Don't want anything to do with you.
Trevor Ariza.
Bye. Yeah. But these are three players who
contributed.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And played a role and played a part and had something to do with it. And I got nothing ill to say about any of them at all. I mean, usually there are one or two guys that I'm very glad to see go. They just weren't good fits. All three of these guys were really good fits here. They really were. The Suns just had an opportunity to get better, to spend their money in a way that was better allocated for success, and to get a guy like Chris Paul, and you're presented with an opportunity like that, man, you're crazy if you don't take it. You have to take it.
They had to.
Yep.
You had to try.
They had no choice.
You had to try.
Yep.
Now, I would love to talk with these players. Did Chris Paul affect your decision to sign with the Phoenix Suns?
Like Etwan Moore or Crowder. Or, yeah, those guys.
Did Chris Paul being here help make your decision easier to come play for the Phoenix Suns?
I bet for a guy like Crowder it did.
Yeah?
Crowder's played 72 playoff games in his career. You think he wants to miss the playoffs? I mean, he's practically played a full season's worth of NBA games in the playoffs. He wants to go to a playoff team. That's his gig.
I have a ton of people that are asking me about the biannual exception, and I'll just say that they're not going to use it. They're going to save it. Either for next year or when a player gets waived later in the season. Sometimes players get bought out. So if a player gets bought out, they could then use that mid-level, that biannual exception to go get that player later in the season.
There's just one game left on the NFL's Week 11 schedule. It has some major implications for the Cardinals in the playoffs, and we'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Time for the Coors Light What's On Tonight. Brought to you by our friends at Coors Light. Enjoy game day specials valley-wide at cold beers and cheeseburgers every Saturday. Both proud sponsors of ASU football. Go Devils tonight. Monday night football. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers hosting the Los Angeles Rams. Lots to watch tonight if you're a Cardinals fan. Lots of what. You have not played that team yet.
No.
You have not at all.
I don't. This will be a good barometer, right, to try to gauge the Rams. I'm having a tough time figuring them out. They can get to the quarterback, right? They got a good defense. They can get to the quarterback. But I really want to see Goff in that offense. That'll be an interesting game tonight with Tampa Bay. And look, the Rams, if they get a win tonight over Tampa Bay, a lot of people are going to be talking about them as the best team in the NFC West.
Here are their wins so far this year. It's not very impressive. They've beaten Dallas. They've beaten Philly. They've beaten the New York Giants. They've beaten the Washington football team. They've beaten the Chicago Bears. And they've beaten the Seattle Seahawks. Okay? I'll give them credit for the Seahawks one.
Yeah,
that was a nice win. Their other five, hot garbage. I mean, just not quality wins at all.
Give me the five again.
It's basically the NFC East
and
the Bears.
But that's the most competitive division in all of football. There is no division of football more competitive than the NFC East.
I love your definition of competitive.
It's actually
somewhat accurate.
It's the most competitive division in all of football is the NFC East. Every team in there has the same amount of wins. They all have the same amount of wins. Anybody could win that division.
It's like taking the four worst movies you've ever seen and having a competition among them to see which of the four is the worst of all time. It's competitive.
It's really competitive.
Pulp Fiction.
Oh,
the Three Amigos.
I'd have to think of the other ones.
Pulp Fiction, The Three Amigos. I'd love to know what other two movies you would put on that list.
I'll figure it out for you.
Okay. Yeah, your four worst movies of all time, I'd be really curious what they are. You'd probably put Dunkirk on there. I know you hated that.
I did hate
Dunkirk. I remember
it was
you hated
terrible.
That.
Terrible. Yeah. God, I was so bad.
So, yes, the NFC East.
But I loved Midway.
Okay.
Midway was fantastic.
The NFC
East. Oh, what was the one where Brad Pitt pretended to be, like, going after Hitler?
Inglourious Basterds.
Inglourious Basterds. That would be on there, too.
So, Inglourious Basterds, Three Amigos, Dunkirk, and Pulp Fiction would be your four worst movies of all time.
Yeah, I could find one worse than Dunkirk, but for now, that would
okay, I know you didn't like it very much.
Right.
Yes. Wait, I was just stalling long enough for Jordan to go into the Inglourious Bastards sound file and
name another Quentin Tarantino movie. Kill Bill.
Jackie Brown, Kill Bill Volume 1, Kill Bill Volume 2, The Hateful Eight, Django Unchained.
Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs.
See, Grit.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah, we've established you're not a Quentin Tarantino guy. Yes, the NFC East is competitive, much like picking four of the worst movies of all time.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with George Clooney?
No, it was with Brad Pitt and Leo DiCaprio.
Okay.
It was the one that just came out like a year ago.
What's the one with George Clooney where he was like a warrior from like the...
I have to look. I need a little more. Give me just a little more.
I know, I'm not.
George Clooney is a warrior.
Like a Roman warrior or something.
Oh, Hail Caesar.
That was so bad. That was terrible. That was one of the worst.
So Quentin
movies.
Tarantino and the Coen brothers.
Pretty much, yeah.
Hail Caesar Quentin Tarantino?
No, it was the Coen brothers. Pretty much two of the most iconic filmmakers in the history of movies in the last 50 years, and Gambo thinks they suck.
Stupidest movie of all. One of the stupidest movies of all time, Hail Caesar.
Two of the most
iconic. I didn't watch more than 20 minutes of it. It was so bad.
Ever, and Gambo thinks they suck.
So bad. Terrible.
See, there you go. That's how the NFC East is compared. Competitive.
Yes.
But yes, it is ultra competitive to see which 5-win football team is going to get a playoff spot. Is going to get to host a playoff spot. I mean, that's the indignity of it all, right? It's not just that the Eagles or the Cowboys or Washington or the Giants are going to get a playoff spot. They get to host a playoff game. And at best, the team that wins that division will have won 7 games. At best, if they're lucky. They will have won 7 games.
That means somebody's got to win 4 games.
That's why I said at best, if they're lucky, they've won 4 games. Chances are it's a 6-win team hosting a playoff game.
I'm hoping for 5. I would love to see that in that
division. A 5-win team?
How embarrassing would that be?
It would be.
You'd if be. A 5-11 team or a 5-10-1 team goes to the playoffs.
You know what's even more embarrassing?
What?
The team that's the 5 seed in the playoffs
gets the home
losing team. To that team in the playoffs.
Like Seattle won at 7-9. They won a playoff game at 7-9.
You know, look, wherever you go, other than Dallas, there's going to be weather because that game is either going to be in Washington, New York, or Philly in January. So it's going to be cold. Yeah, it's that. That's the embarrassment. Who's the 5 seed? Who's going to lose to the 4 seed in the playoffs? That's the champion of the NFC East because that's going to be embarrassing. So that game is coming up. Obviously, huge implications tonight with the Cardinals. As we mentioned before, if the Rams win, they're the first place team in the NFC West. If they lose, the Cardinals actually jump them in the standings. The Cardinals would be the 6th seed going into this weekend's actions, or games, I should say, and the Rams would be the 7th seed. So, a lot on the line tonight, but more than anything, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's kind of a referendum on the Rams. Who are they? How good are they? They haven't really, other than Seattle, they've beaten nobody of any significance. They're playing a really good football team tonight. How do they look doing it? Did they get blown out? And then the Bucks, they've been terrible in primetime games this year. Terrible in primetime games.
Was the New Orleans game primetime?
New Orleans game was
primetime.
The Bears game was primetime. And there was a third where they just got humiliated on national TV.
I mean, my thought right now is that that's the best team in the NFC.
Over the Saints?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if Breeze is going to come back and okay or not. I mean, I would say, I know Tampa Bay got blown out by him. I know they would. I mean, I could go with the Saints too.
Okay.
I mean,
the Saints have swept them. That's the only reason I asked. Saints are 2-0 against them this year. But their 3 losses this year have all been on primetime affairs. Maybe they weren't humiliated.
So you're saying take the Rams.
They lost on Thursday night to the Bears by 1 point.
By 1 point.
That's still pretty humiliating.
Yeah, that's right. That's still pretty bad.
All right, so New Orleans, the best team? Me and Jordan said New Orleans like last week. All right, I'll just go stick with New Orleans.
Yeah,
New Orleans.
Stick with what you said
I'll
the first place.
Stick with New Orleans.
Yeah, stick with what you said the first
stick
place.
With the Saints.
And then obviously in this week 11 in the NFL, a lot of injury stuff to come out. Joe Burrow, that's a real shame.
They got to build that offensive line. I mean, you can't have it. I mean, he was having a great year, but you have to protect your quarterback. And they're going to have to do that. He got sacked 32 times this year. It's too many. They've got some skill position players. They don't have a good rushing attack, but they have good wide receivers. But the most important thing for them is they really have to make sure that they've got a quality offensive line, because that kid's talented, and you don't want him to get his head kicked in every week, because then he's going to have a short career.
Been very impressed by him. Been very impressed by Justin Herbert and how he's played. He had another monster day. It was against the Jets, but he had another monster day yesterday. Tua got benched yesterday. Ryan Fitzpatrick had to come in and replace him because he was not playing well at all against the Broncos.
I know. And you know, if they'd only had two or three wins, then, you would keep two in the game and let him learn from his mistakes. But because they had a four-game winning streak and they're trying to win that damn division and get to the playoffs, they needed a little Fitz magic. It didn't happen, but they had to try.
Luke Lipinski is coming up next with a full edition of The Rundown. We're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock right here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.